Brought to you by Bose, presenting their most advanced pilot headset ever, the Bose A20 Aviation Headset. It provides acclaimed noise reduction, along with a comfortable fit, clear audio, and Bluetooth connectivity.
Hello, I'm Glenn Pugh for AvWeb.com. Like a lot of pilots, James McCartney wanted to fly airplanes ever since he was a little boy. James pursued his passion and spent the majority of his professional life in a cockpit. His career ultimately spanned the military and four different airlines. It included the challenges of deregulation, industry bankruptcies, contract negotiations, and mandatory retirement at age 60. But his greatest challenge was the one that brought his flying to an end and caused him to reflect back on the lessons of a long career in aviation. We're speaking today with Angela McCartney Miro, Jim's sister. Angela helped her brother Jim collect his thoughts in a book after he was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer in August of 2010 at the age of 73. Angela, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Angela, I know you lost your brother in February of this year. I want to offer condolences on behalf of myself and our audience of fellow aviators. And I think what we've found in your book, together with Jim, titled Jim McCartney, My Life in Flight, is a personal account that rather tells the story of aviation through the time Jim flew, and in many ways, how it crafted aviation as we know it today. And talk a little bit to me about his experiences as an aviator. Jim joined the Air Force on his 17th birthday and became crew chief on a B-47. Why did he leave the military?
He left the military because he was on the flight line. You know, many times he slept on the flight line because they were in the strategic air command and they had to be subject to taking off within 15 minutes. This was a time that the Russians put up Sputnik, so everybody was on high alert during this time. And one of the pilots told him, son, you don't want to be in the Air Force. You want to get with the airlines. So he just redirected that career path.
What was his first airline job?
His first airline job was with Trans-Texas, now known as United. It morphed from Trans-Texas to Texas International to Continental, and most recently changed its name to United after the merger.
His life there wasn't without what I'd call major speed bumps, was it? Tell me about Jim's experience with Frank Lorenzo at Texas International.
Well, Frank was notorious in his animosity towards all the unions on the airline property, and he was his stated goal to bust these unions. He told my brother, I can make you guys do anything I want you to do. All I have to do is rewrite the manual. I don't have to coddle you, period.
And how did Jim work with that?
Jim continued to try to negotiate with management in every way possible. And one incident after a contentious airline dispute, none of the pilots would let Frank ride in the cockpit. So Jim saw him get on from Houston to New Orleans and said, Frank, come on up to the cockpit. Well, they got into a heated discussion during the flight, and when they landed in New Orleans, all the passengers were deplaned. And the gate agent came in and said, Frank, if you don't get off this plane, this delay is going to be on you. So he left. Jim flies back to Houston, and when he gets there, he finds out that they've sent a crew to Frank's home to tell the family that he's been killed in a plane crash. But he missed the plane. He did not get killed in the plane crash. He was going to catch up. I believe it was an Eastern flight into Kennedy to New York, and they landed and hit the runway lights. Killed most of the passengers. I think only 8 survived, but Frank was not on the plane. And I don't think Jim ever told anyone about it. And he said he and Frank never discussed it.
He did end up working, or trying to work, with Mr. Lorenzo on some negotiations, but some of them didn't work out the way he'd hoped, although perhaps Mr. Lorenzo would call it extending an olive branch, but Jim didn't see it that way, did he?
No, he really didn't. In fact, they would make an agreement, and then Lorenzo would renege, and this happened again and again and again.
Ultimately, Lorenzo offered him to come back to the airline for pay much higher than his peers, didn't he?
Right. Yes, he did. He, after the Continental strike was over, he asked him to come back, and Jim said, no, I cannot cross the picket line. I will not come back. He didn't think it was fair that he was offered the opportunity to come back at his regular pay while his colleagues were all being cut to having their pay cut.
Now, through his career, Jim had the opportunity to try and work on techniques that would help airlines be more profitable. He worked on fuel-saving techniques in particular. Could you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes, he developed a fuel savings program, and the idea was to pay the bonus, the saving, a part of the bonus to the pilots as incentive for them to save fuel. But the management did not want to pay the pilots, so they offered instead a week's vacation reward. And one pilot thought, I'm going to get it this month, and he flew the plane in such a manner that he burned out the tires on one landing. He was landing on one engine and fusing the not turning on the thrusters, which put increased pressure on the tires. And the next crew came in, got in the plane, all the tires were flat.
And Jim also once flew with a captain that he thought was trouble. You mentioned it to me when we spoke earlier. What happened there?
He was in Dallas, and this particular captain thought he was an expert on everything. You know, if you bring up a subject, he already knew all about it. If you discussed the Bible, he'd talk to God directly, and that was it. So he said, he wrote in his logbook, this guy's going to be troubled someday. And it wasn't too much later, this pilot crashed into the Washita Mountains in Arkansas. He was more than 100 miles off course because he didn't trust his instruments, and he was trying to fly VFR in IFR weather. In fact, that was the official findings of the NTSB when they investigated the crash.
And this was one of the incidents that led, that may have led in part to implementation of what we now call cockpit resource management. Could you tell me how those things are tied together?
Yes. In this crash, the cockpit voice recorder recorded the co-pilot repeatedly questioning the pilot as to where are we? Do we know for sure? We need to look at the charts. And repeatedly. And finally he said, you're going to have to take the controls and I'm going to look at the charts and find out where we are. And when he found out, he said, the altitude is 44 ton, and that was the impact. So they were flying well below the altitude.
In review of that incident, did Jim help lead the charge to what would become cockpit resource management, where there was more of a team effort?
Well, this was in the early days, and I think a few of the airlines had already tentatively started looking into this, and he got with the chief pilot at Texas International. And they started pushing management. And finally, they agreed to look into it. And they hired a psychologist at the University of Texas to investigate and help them establish this program. And it proved to be very successful.
Jim's career saw, what, I think 12 engines he lost as a pilot. Numerous other emergencies that through his experience of working professionally in the industry at that time. There was one weight and balance incident that I think you covered. Could you tell me a little bit about the drill bit?
Yes. One of his colleagues, Alan Kelly, was flying out of Houston to Austin, I believe, and he looked at the weight and balance forms and set all of his flaps and what have you to what it said on the chart. And when he started pulling up to be airborne, it was not working, so he kept having to increase the power and whatever to get airborne. He made it, but it was just too much of a struggle and shouldn't have been that. There's something wrong. So he called ahead to the airport and said, when I land, I want you to unload all the baggages, but don't take them inside. I want to see what's back there. And when they got it off, he crawled inside the baggage bin, and he found a 6,000-pound drill bit that had been on the plane for about the past 5 days. They failed to unload it at its destination, and then it just dropped off the paperwork.
The book itself, it's sort of a collection of these the ups and downs of bankruptcies. It wasn't an easy ride. After his diagnosis, Jim had some time to reflect on his life in aviation with you. Not all of us will be faced with our own mortality in quite the way your brother was. When he looked back on his life, did that perspective change his view on how he lived his life?
Every time we worked on the book together, he would become visibly animated. He absolutely loved going through all this stuff and reviewing his history. And he decided, you know, it was not what I would have picked out for myself. But looking back, I wouldn't change a thing. It was a great ride. He loved it.
And I understand, too, that he's left a legacy in the air.
His daughter, Tambra Swan, is flying as a captain for America West, now U.S. Airways. She flies an A320 Airbus. When she wanted to become a pilot, he took her out of the airport. She was 16,
We've been speaking with Angela McCartney Muro. She's co-author of the book she wrote with her brother, Jim McCartney, My Life in Flight. Find it at your favorite bookseller. I'm Glenn Pugh for avweb.com. Thanks for listening.
Brought to you by Bose, presenting their most advanced pilot headset ever, the Bose A20 Aviation Headset. It provides acclaimed noise reduction along with a comfortable fit, clear audio, and Bluetooth connectivity.